greetings and a bodaciously delicious hello to you from sunny Vancouver. This is Tom bringing you the August 2011 issue of Tomicide Solutions, mysteriously entitled 17 Common Direct Mail Mistakes IT Companies Make, Part 2. Well, last month we covered part one, and in part one we covered some of the issues IT companies are facing regarding their direct mail campaigns. So this month we'll continue. Oh, by the way, have you heard that in a desperate effort to win the Second World War, British scientists had come up with the brilliant idea of feeding Hitler with female hormones so over time he would have become docile and submissive, just like his young sister Paula Wolf? This great strategy, as explained in Professor Brian Ford's book Secret Weapons, Technology, Science and the Race to Win World War II, was that British spies would mix estrogen into Moustache Dolphy's meals, and slowly but surely he would calm down so the Allies could reason with him. Of course, it didn't work out. The other great piece of British warfare imbecility was putting glue on Nazi soldiers' boots and sticking them to the ground, making them basically immobilizing them. That didn't work either. So much for nothing, or as good old Will wrote a few years ago, much ado for nothing. And the interesting thing is that this is happening in so many IT companies as well. They hired the big fancy advertising agencies to come up with slogans including farting parrots or speeding flamingos, just like in the local Telos, the phone company's campaigns, but they don't really achieve anything. Actually, one of Telos's campaigns has gone as far as showing a dirty pig on the picture with its arse to the reader, and the caption says, "Share some dirty pictures." Well, and Telos has always been in trouble. But in spite of spending millions of advertising and fattening advertising agencies' purses, Telos's services are still blazingly inferior. Customer service sucks, and bureaucracy and the union are squeezing every chance of improvement out of the company. But what can be done? There was a good spell of service a few years ago. The union people went on strike and Telos called in non-unionized contractors. Customer service almost instantly improved a good few notches. Then the union people got their demanded pay increases and better benefits, returned to work, and customer service quality instantly plummeted. And it's been lower than a snake's belly button ever since. Well, but hey, what can you expect from the union? And I suppose it will stay the same at the same low level until the union goes on strike again and professionals get brought in to provide the service. Anyway, the message is that selling expensive technical solutions to sophisticated buyers requires a bit more than singing pigs and farting parrots. That requires some serious direct response marketing, be it direct mail or other forms of marketing, but the whole idea is the direct mail, direct response model. Although in this article we deal with direct mail. So let's continue our exploration to see what other direct response marketing mistakes IT companies tend to make. Mistake number 9, neglecting the ins and outs of how the brain processes information. Neuromarketing is the name of the science that focuses on how the human brain processes marketing messages. You can write messages that the brain either instantly accepts or rejects. The idea behind neuromarketing is that it's the subconscious mind, unconscious mind, whichever name you prefer, the subconscious mind, not the conscious mind, that drives decisions and how to respond to marketing messages, brands, products and services. The subconscious mind is the decision maker, while the conscious mind is just a super smart gatekeeper. The reptilian brain that makes up the subconscious mind can be influenced by using its six key characters. It's selfish in nature, I mean the subconscious mind. It revels in contrasts, without it the brain gets confused. It needs tangible and familiar things. It can't handle, well, concepts, pie in the sky concepts. It relies on primacy and recency of events for remembering. For the brain, for the old brain, beginnings and ends matter. The rest is deleted, pretty much. It needs visual representation of the conveyed message. It responds to emotion. Emotions are linked to survival, which is the number one job of the old brain, the subconscious brain. Mistake number 10, missing the postscript. Every marketing document has hotspots. Hotspots are readers' eye, spots where readers' eyes rest a bit longer than on other parts. One of these hotspots is the headline. After reading the headline, is this message relevant for me at all? Readers' eyes jump to the end of the letter, to the signature. Who is this message from? Do I know this person? So what that means that you should put some vital information right after the signature. That's the spot for the postscript. Based on various tests, over 80% of readers go to the PS before reading the whole body of the document. So they read the headline, jump to the signature, and upon reading the signature, they see there's a PS, a postscript, they read that. Actually, the copy itself is the last thing people read. First the headline, then an opening paragraph, maybe scanning the subheads, but not even that, image captions. But quite often, right after the opening paragraph, boom, they whoosh to the postscript. Mistake 11, engaging in one-shot mails. In an old boy way, direct mail is like dating. It means it takes a number of contacts to land new clients. The problem is that the whole direct mail concept requires something most IT companies don't have: consistency to maintain campaigns beyond one-shot mail with long-term focus to achieve lasting results. Instead of maintaining a good campaign, it's easier to hire an ad agency to write a sexy slogan and then distributing the slogan to the trade press. And then they are surprised that, hey, the trade press doesn't give a shit about our slogans. Of course, the trade press has better things to do than worrying about somebody else's slogans. Yes, the other options are doing it sort of in-house with some external help, but not to mention that hiring an advertising agency is as expensive and useless, but it's also something that can be abdicated, so no one in-house can be made accountable for it. And this is great because most people hate being held accountable for anything. I think this is why a copywriting genius, the late Gary Halbert, bluntly stated that most people are not players. They are spectators living in quiet desperation, envying the player's successes. See the rise of global socialism. Moochers and looters, as Ayn Rand calls them in Atlas shrugs. All over the world demand bigger slices of the success pie for themselves, but they absolutely refuse to participate in the making of the pies. They just want to eat, but expect others to make the pies, serve them, do the dishes, and then clean up the kitchen. This moochers and looters mentality can be seen in many IT companies. They want more and better sales leads, but are not willing to put in the required work. Direct response marketing doesn't have to be complicated, mind you, it's complex. And there is a link in the written version, and you can follow that and you can read a bit more about the difference between complex and complicated. So here is a short summary, just in a few words. Describing human beings. A complicated person is analogous to the tax code or the Windows registry. This is to say that they are problematic, convoluted, torturous, difficult, and inconsistent. And inconsistent is a big word. A complex person is like an iPod. That is to say that they are consistent, straightforward, and user-friendly, while also being rather sophisticated. But read the whole article. It's really neat. It's really eye-opening. I think you will love it. My interpretation is that if something is systematically complicated, that's complex. As a system, it produces consistent and predictable results. Also, it can be scientifically analyzed and understood. But if something is haphazardly complicated, that's just complicated, it produces random results. It is almost totally impossible to analyze and understand. Direct response marketing is like a Swiss watch. It has lots of intricate moving parts, but it's a system that can be analyzed and understood, and the system that can produce pretty consistent and predictable results. So yes, direct response marketing, and within that direct mail, is complex but not complicated. To this definition, between the difference in difference between complicated and complex, I would also use Deming's definition for how does it go? If you can't describe what you do as a process in a box and arrow diagram, then you don't know what you do. And that's a good point. So it can be, what you do can be complex, but doesn't have to be complicated. Because the point when it becomes complicated is when it becomes chaotic. That's it. Something complex is systematic. Something complicated is chaotic. The word has just jumped to my mind as I'm doing this podcast. Number 12. Poor or non-existing follow-up. This is an interesting topic, and 100 marketers have 101 differing options about it. Poor follow-up can fall into two groups: no follow-up and haphazard follow-up. And here lies an interesting problem. Many IT companies are so busy running after brand new and stone cold leads that they don't have time to follow up on existing lukewarm leads. They may know it takes less time, energy, and money to turn lukewarm leads into hot leads than turning ice cold leads into lukewarm ones, but they operate on the, it's not the kill, but the thrill of the chase mantra, as well, we all learned it many years ago from many sources, including the Deep Purple song, knocking on the back door. It's not the kill, it's the thrill of the chase. And While in spite of the backbreaking hard work, the temperature of the cold leads rises infinitesimally slowly, the temperature of the existing and now neglected lukewarm leads falls more quickly than the proverbial brick. But sadly, both the company's philosophy and the compensation system are set up in such a way that makes salespeople focus on hunting down new prospects. There are sales trainers out there who actually look down on activities that have nothing to do with going after brand new leads. In their eyes, nurturing existing leads is a wasteful way of basically using salespeople's time. So let's look at some of the numbers. It takes about 21 touch points to convert a new lead into a paying client. The problem is that 2/3 of the touch points get ignored and only 1/3 is received and consumed. By consumed, I mean read, watched, listened to, and acted upon. The problem is that sellers lose interest in going through all 21 touch points, change direction, and start running after new buyers who already have purchase orders in their hands, signed and approved. So all they need is a pitch meeting, a proposal, some dog and pony show, and then they have a chance to win the contract. The prospect is now client. The problem is that the later you join the buying process, the more likely you get messages from prospects like, "Don't call us, we call you if we are interested," or "Send a detailed proposal and we'll tell you what we think," or "Thanks for the great presentation, let me run it by it legal." By the time buyers reach such late stage in the buying processes, they know exactly what they want and they are looking for a pair of hands to do it at the lowest possible price. This is how the RFP process squeezes value out of the, well, whole bidding process, the whole buyer-seller interaction. Using RFPs, buyers are looking for cheap pairs of hands to do the work in a way that's dictated by buyers. This is why the key is to enter the race as early as possible and not to waste your life on bidding in any way. Mistake 13, relying on creativity at the expense of principles. No, I'm not against creativity per se, but I find it a tad problematic when people use their creativity shield to justify the ignorance of well-established principles. It doesn't matter how creative I am, we know from well-established principles of physics that gravity is 9.81 meter per second square, and no amount of creativity can change that. Regardless of how creative I am, if I go up to the top of a tall building and leap off the roof, regardless of my creativity and belief in my ability to fly, I won't fly, I will plunge. And at the end of my journey, I may look rather silly. All in all, creativity, design, colors, etc. is a pretty small contributor in direct mail campaigns. Actually, look at the diagram here. What you find is that the overall success of your direct mail campaign is about 40% of your list, 40% of your offer, about 15% of your copy, and about 5% of your graphics and image and the design elements. So the reality is that even if you hire a kick-ass copywriter, but you don't have a responsive list and your offer is barely ho-hum, nothing can be done. Okay, mediocre results can be achieved, but nothing breakthrough, nothing major. Yet, so many IT business owners are willing to pay top rates for creative people but haggle the living daylights out of copywriters. And when it comes to building their in-house lists and developing kick-ass offers, they fall shorter than a shortbread cookie on a wet and windy Sunday afternoon. The other side of creativity is beefing up the copy by using shop-worn buzzwords like industry leader, best of breed, one-stop shopping, bleeding edge, etc. retarded expressions. Have you noticed in life that the more glorified the language that describes a product or service, the crappier it is? Of course, not always, of course, but often enough. And there are words and phrases that your English teacher may not approve, but decades of testing tell us that in the real world they work, and that's what matters. The rest is theory. So, if you offer white paper as a gift, then emphasize that it's a free gift, even though a gift by nature is free. Actually, whenever gift versus free gift has been tested, free gift has generated far more responses than gift. Because going back to, remember, the neuromarketing, talking to the old brain, the subconscious mind, the gift doesn't trigger the subconscious mind, doesn't trigger the decision maker, but the word free does. That's a big difference. Some other good phrases are no obligation, no salesman will call, details inside, see inside, or the word new. And test everything you create. Marketing is like a swamp. One phrase can sink, but its slightly modified version can swim rather well. Just think of the two phrases. Are you making mistakes in English? And then, when that headline flopped, the copywriter changed it. Are you making these mistakes in English? That created curiosity, and now that question addresses the subconscious mind, the old reptilian brain. So basically one short word of difference between the loser and the winner, so that's important. Mistake 14. Writing too much about your stuff. Reader's attention is the key to marketing. How are the readers likely to pay maximum attention? Well, if we write about them, their predicaments, their frustrations, their afflictions, their aspirations, goals, dreams, achievements. Most IT marketing materials are written in vendor speak. Too much attention is placed on talking about sellers, their products, and their companies. It comes from the fact that most written materials are produced by employees and they want to keep their jobs. So they often write boss and company glorifying content. Hey, they want to write good copy, but the term good copy is pretty relative. They want to please their bosses. For them, good copy is about that makes the boss happy. That makes the boss say, wow, I really like that. You are really talented at this. You really nicely outline my Stanford education and my PhD in chimney sweeping or whatever. And what the market thinks is irrelevant because the boss likes it. So, of course, the boss is not a copywriter, so when he likes something, what exactly does that mean from the target market standpoint? Not much, not a sausage. The sad reality is that you or your stuff is irrelevant to your buyers. They read your stuff because they hope to find solutions to their problems. Yes, they want to read about you and your stuff too, but that comes later. And just remember what Claude Hopkins wrote in Scientific Advertising in 1923. And by the way, Scientific Advertising is still the Bible for marketers. Look at all the marketing gurus out there. They earn their money by rewording scientific advertising. The scientific advertising laid down the principles, and all the marketing experts out there operating on those principles. And some people may say, yeah, but that was written in 1923. Yes, it was, but what is marketing, mathematics and psychology? And both mathematics and psychology are pretty permanent. They don't change that much. 1 + 1 is still 2, as it was in 1923. And humans operate the same way. Anyway, Claude wrote, remember, this is vital. Remember, the people you address are selfish, as we all are. They care nothing about your interests or your profits. They seek service for themselves. Ignoring this fact is a common mistake and a costly mistake in advertising. And say, in effect, buy my brand, give me the trade you give to others, let me have the money. That's not a popular appeal. The best ads ask no one to buy. That is useless. Often they do not quote price. They do not say that dealers handle the product. The ads are based entirely on service. They offer wanted information. They cite advantages to users. Perhaps they offer a sample, or to buy the first package, or to send something on approval so the customer may prove the claims without any cost of risk. Copywriting legend David Ogilvy was known for saying that nobody at any level should be allowed to have anything to do with advertising until he has read this book, Scientific Advertising, 7 times. So that's a strong endorsement for a very strong book. There are free copies on the web. Just search a little bit. You will find both written and audio versions. Read it, as Ogilvy recommends, 7 times, and that will open your eyes. So, and if you hire a traditional advertising agency to write your marketing materials, well, you are in deep yogurt. Most advertising agencies are not direct response focused. What they do is a form of image marketing. You can read a little bit about image marketing in the link, the difference between image marketing and direct response marketing. The focus is on creating marketing materials that win creative awards and stoke their clients' egos. And to protect themselves, they say that the effectiveness of marketing can't be measured. It can be. And since they want to keep their operating costs to the minimum, they employ either low-grade copywriters or none at all. Imagine a copywriter who spends 2 hours to write a copy about washing soap, 1 hour writing about recyclable rubbish bags, and then another hour about a six-figure IT solution which he knows nothing about. Actually, do you know that subject matter expertise is the number one criteria buyers use to hire external professionals? In a 2008 study by Broderick and Company, there is a breakdown of what buyers of blazingly successful companies are looking for when hiring external professionals. So that diagram is worth considering. Mistake 15, ignoring the 5 major senses. While a newspaper ad is two-dimensional, the direct mail package can be three-dimensional. It can also appeal to sense that two-dimensional advertising can't touch. In a direct mail package, you can trigger all 5 senses: sight, hearing, touch, smell, and taste. Yet, most IT companies that use direct mail use the standard number 10 envelope or postcards. At least you can use some objects to give lump to your mail. You can get a Jiffy envelope, put in a few pieces of walnuts or hazelnuts or something, and then put a big headline on your letter that you're not gay, so you are not if you don't request this free white paper. Read the white paper and then eat the nuts or something. Okay, it's a bit bold, and many IT decision makers, IT executives are fairly conservative, but with a bit of boldness you can bring taste and flavor into your campaign. Now, some people may say that bulk and addressing multiple senses can add to the price of the mailing, and they are right. But let's think like marketers. What are we seeking here? Low cost or high return? Let's go with high return, it's more rewarding. You send out 100 letters to 100 sales leads in 100 non-button envelopes at a pretty low price and get one or two responses. Or you send out 100 letters in 100 FedEx Jiffy envelopes for $1,500 and get 40 responses. Basically, it costs you less than $40 to generate a lead. That's pretty good, considering the lifetime value of that client. Now, what is the lifetime value on one average client to you? Is it in the five figures, or maybe six or seven? The lifetime business that you can generate from that $1,500 initial investment can be in the range of tens of millions of dollars. So there is no point in crying over $1,500. You still get a few thousand percent of return on investment. As humans, using our five senses of sight, hearing, touch, smell, and taste, we digest information in three ways: auditory, visual, or kinesthetic. The more senses your direct mail package can activate, the better chance you've got that recipients actually consume your information. I've also used $100 banknotes on the top of my letters, indicating that many of these notes are waiting for the company if we do business together. With some of them, I have done business. Some buyers returned the money and complimented me for my innovative approach. Well, it wasn't mine, it was invented, as far as I know, by the copywriting genius, the late Gary Halbert, Prince of Print and self-proclaimed Alpha Shih Weasel. And of course, some clients just took the money and never got back to me, and that's okay, that's part of the package. Yes, I've lost a few $100 on the exercise, but I've also initially, because of the couple of shitheads who took the money and disappeared. But I've also gained a good few thousand in new business with great clients. Yes, we can be creative here, but we also have to make sure that creativity doesn't overshadow the main message. As a copywriter, Herschel Gordon Lewis is fond of saying, cleverness for the sake of cleverness may be a liability, not an asset. We have to remember that. Number 16, asking readers to take too big a step to respond. The whole idea behind direct response is that readers take a specific action after reading your message. The problem is that the kind of action many IT companies require is as big as asking a person with a raging vertigo to go to the top of the CN Tower in Toronto and do the edge walk. Now that's 356 meters, about 116 stories above the ground, so imagine that. This is why in military training the new recruits don't even see weapons, let alone using them, for several months. Yes, physically they could use them, anyone can pull a trigger, but morally and emotionally they are not prepared just yet. This is the same thing. So the call for action must be pretty small. Here are some retarded calls for action. Call for free consultation. Everyone knows that most free consultations are thinly disguised sales pitches, so buyers know that. Request our full brochure. For what? It's like responding to a personal ad by saying, request my free prenuptial agreement template, or request a free price quote. Vendors do blind quotations. Respected authorities scope out possibilities jointly with buyers and then document their verbal agreements in proposals and present some options. Yes, the name is a misnomer, but because by the time you write the proposal, it's not a proposal, it's just an agreement. But here we are, and there you go. That's a name, and let's just live with it. Or request a free demonstration. Again, buyers are shit scared that vendors come down on them like a ton of bricks, and the demo turns into a sales pitch. Well, they almost always do. Using the old saying, buyers don't want 1-inch drills, but 1-inch holes. Don't talk to them about your drills, but talk to them about the art and science of making their holes rather amazing. Don't talk to them about your solutions. Talk to them about their problems. Don't ask them to request a demo of your CRM software. Ask them to request your white paper on 10 ways of boosting their salespeople performance. So how big of an action do you ask buyers to take? In sports, you have to warm up before attempting to exceed your best performance. This is the same. Warm them up gradually, starting with small actions. Number 17. Sending out anything without a specific offer and call for action. The whole idea behind direct response marketing is that every piece you send out should be responded to in a trackable way. This expectation for response makes your whole direct mail campaign quantifiable. And just because recipients don't respond with the desired action, you still can track the inaction. The key is not the response itself, but the trackable nature of whatever recipients do. If you get 100% inaction, you can improve it because you have a starting point. When you send out a letter that needs a decision to be made at the end of the reading, hence a yes-no response, so from the number of responses, you know how successful the letter was. Is it a problem if someone doesn't respond? No, not at all. Remember, in peddler land, it's all about persuasion. In respected authority land, it's about self-selection. You put out your stuff and buyers decide what to do about it. It's like fishing, really. You bait the hook, cast your line, and the fish decides whether or not to accept your bait. If the fish accepts, then you have a nice dinner. If the fish refuses, you may need a Big Mac, which is really just one notch better than a hard wallop on the head with a frying pan. But there you go. You can't play the persuasion game with fish. And buyers are the same too. They decide, regardless of what you want. But what we can do is to offer easy to accept action steps. That's the key. Mistake 18, using cheap copy as a filling material. Your copy serves two purposes. It acts both as a content to educate and inform readers, and the copy to facilitate the reader's decision making. In a good direct mail piece, we need both good content and good copy. Copy without content is peddling, but content without copy is just charity. The best choice is a healthy blend of both, depending where buyers are in the buying processes. I prefer to stay away from persuasion because my goal with copy is to help readers to make yes-no decisions regarding my offers. So it's more like the facilitation of a decision-making process, and I'm not married to the outcome. Persuasion, being married to the outcome, is just a form of manipulation, trying to flog my stuff in any which way possible and not taking no for an answer. Basically making up my mind, I dump this shit on you no matter what, no matter how much you resist, because I will manipulate you, I will twist your arm until you give me money. That's idiotic. And that's a pretty unpleasant way of doing business. At last, not for me, and as I've found, most IT professionals hate it. As a former client has told me, persuading people to do what I want them to do cuts right into my integrity, so I just stay away from it. I show them what it is and what could be, and the decision is theirs. They choose what they want to do. And as long as there are enough people in her niche who are not happy with the status quo and are willing to do something about it, her firm has a preponderance of business at premium fees and prices. And that's pretty good. On summary, yes, it's true. Direct response marketing can be a company's proverbial brave knight, like Sir Lancelot in shiny armor on a white horse, ready to save the day. The problem is that by the time executives have finished fiddling with the moving parts of direct mail campaigns, the whole campaign looks like a self-appointed squire wrapped in tinfoil, wielding a frying pan and riding an old limping donkey on the verge of final exhaustion. Well, dear reader, meet the proverbial Sancho Panza. He has all the good intentions in the world, but unless intentions meet expertise, nothing useful can happen. And whatever industry pundits say that direct mail is dead or dying, in my experience, direct mail is a pretty effective way of generating high-quality traffic to your website too. Yes, certain aspects of direct mail may well be a tad long in the tooth, so here and there you may have to break from, well, conventional wisdom. Some people may criticize you, but the interesting thing is that the harsher the critics are, the more commercial bottom feeders they are, and the higher the likelihood that they would use the same method if they had bumped into it first. So let's ignore the critics. Or as Douglas Adams wrote in Mostly Harmless, some of the things that live in the lower intestines of rats would disagree with the above statement, but most of the things that live in the lower intestines of rats are highly disagreeable anyway, so their opinion can and should be discounted. People have their own ways of doing business and you have yours, and there are differences, of course. So look at your past direct mail campaigns and see how you could improve the next one. Consider the 18 tips we've been through here and see where you can make significant improvement pretty quickly. So that was Tomicide Solutions, August 2011, the concluding part of the 17 mistakes, or 18 really, for some reason the title remained 17, so let's take the number 18 as a bonus. 17 common mistakes IT companies make in their direct mail campaigns. So hopefully you found some valuable bits and bobs there. In the meantime, have a great day, have a great week, and we'll talk in September.